Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Spencer Jolly Green Williams. I don't know.
Okay, hey.
It's the season, so I'm just trying to keep it festive.
The season for broccoli? Because it always sounds like you were going with Jolly Green Choice.
I mean, you are tall, so I mean that kind of does go with the territory.
Uh-huh.
So, just saying.
All right.
We got a great show in store for you, as we're going to be talking about some really unique things within film and TV that you may not actually be aware of. And we had to bring in, of course, the intern to help us with this conversation. Intern Amy is back.
I guess. They said there'd be donuts. We've been in this strife for a couple of episodes
now.
No.
We said that you could come back if you brought donuts.
I brought hot chocolate. Tis the season.
Ah, well, I guess we'll make do. We got a great show in store. We're discussing the elusive nature of MacGuffins. So stick around as we talk about that. But before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. Check us out on all of our websites, or one website. We only have one.
Yeah.
check us out on our websites and all our streaming platforms to hear more of us. We just did a month of Doctor Who. And needless to say, it was a very interesting month. And there's still some debate as to which Doctor is not quite in his right mind. Matt Smith.
Oh,
but we will. If you want to hear more about that, listen to last month's episodes that we talked about all Doctor Who celebrating that elusive time traveler. And of course, Amy. Amy had fun last month as well, I'm assuming, talking about.
I promised I would stay off that stump after what episode that was,
the third week,
the Twice Upon a Time episode. I promised I would get off my Matt Smith stump, so I am firmly staying adjacent to the stump, but not upon it.
So you're standing on a stump. Is it because you're short?
Well, he's just told everyone that you're very tall and I'm very short.
And I'm medium.
What are we, a McDonald's order?
Exactly. Mm. I could call you a you know, what's a small order in Starbucks?
Tall.
A tall? Hey, you're tall. See? You can be tall in some ways.
And then I can be 20?
You can be venti.
Yeah, 20.
Well, speaking of, well, not really speaking of Starbucks, but
what? This has nothing to do with it.
We are ready to dive into our discussion of MacGuffins. Now, MacGuffins are a very unique thing. Not a lot of people are aware of what a MacGuffin is. You hear that term thrown around quite a bit in movie talk, in things, you know, conversations with directors and filmmakers and producers and actors. But it was interesting. When I posed this to the team here, I was like, I want to do an episode that talks about MacGuffins. And when I threw it at Amy was like, what's a MacGuffin?
No, I just asked because
and I told her it wasn't an order at McDonald's.
Thankfully, it's not.
Oh, that's such a low-hanging fruit. Make better jokes.
Hey, it's the beginning of the episode. My gosh. Tough crowd.
He has demands. I like this. He's
I
like,
can see that.
No, we already hit Starbucks, so we hit McDonald's. Neither of them sponsor us.
It's because every article that talks about MacGuffins makes an Egg McMuffin reference.
I've never looked at it.
I like Egg McMuffins, though.
With cheese.
With.
And sausage.
Okay.
Okay.
And we need wonderful. To get off the restaurant talk.
Okay. Let's. Okay.
Can you tell
Thank
who's
you for turning into restaurant chat.
Can you tell who's hungry at this recording?
Apparently, Spencer. He's like, I don't want to talk about food. I don't want to talk about food. we're running out of time on our audio here, okay? As like I said, I mentioned it to Amy. Amy wasn't too sure, so she did her deep dive. And then I mentioned it to Spencer. And when I told Spencer about it, Spencer thought he had an understanding and then apparently fell down the rabbit hole as well.
You ever thought, like, oh, I know what this is, and then you're like, oh, I don't know what this is, and then you end up going through a whole bunch of research and you're like, I still don't know what I'm talking about almost.
True. I feel it. I feel it in my MacGuffins.
Oh my gosh. So
I'm gonna see how many places I can put that word today.
So let me explain something real quick before we go forward. A MacGuffin, in true definition, is a plot device used in films or books that sets the characters into motion and drives the story. A MacGuffin is an object, idea, person, or goal that the characters are either in pursuit of or which serves as motivation for their actions. Excuse me. For their actions. Usually the MacGuffin is revealed in the first act of the film.
Usually.
It's very rare that the MacGuffin actually takes place in the second act. One of those key examples,
which was weird.
Well, it may not have been a MacGuffin then, because of the fact, and it might be a certain special.
What if it became a MacGuffin in the third act because of what happens? I have questions.
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it.
You're like, whoa. It's usually the first act. Let's establish that. Leave it alone.
So. The unique thing, so like we said, it's usually within the first act. Very rarely is it ever in the second. Usually not ever is it in the third, because if it's in the third act, that means it's no longer the MacGuffin. It's no longer the driving force of the entire film. It's no longer the goal. Case in point, one of the ones where I've seen it where it's actually in the second act of a film is The Book of Henry. Movie came out a few years back. The MacGuffin was the tape recorder. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Book of Henry, it's the tape recorder that Naomi Watts.
No.
Naomi Watts is left behind by her recently deceased son, who is a hyper-intelligent little boy who dies from... It's from something to do with his brain or cancer or something. But he dies suddenly in the first act and leaves instructions for his mom to help the little girl next door who is being abused. It's really interesting, but in that perspective, the MacGuffin is the tape recorder, because that is the driving force for how she continues to be motivated by what he instructs her to do. Interestingly enough, the term MacGuffin is actually credited to screenwriter Angus MacPhail, but it wasn't until the wonderful, the illustrious, the absolutely suspenseful Alfred Hitchcock who popularized and mastered the use of the MacGuffin, which in the 1935 film, The 39 Steps, the MacGuffin is the plan for an advanced airplane engine. In another one of his films, The Lady Vanishes, the MacGuffin is a coded message contained in a piece of music. You don't know what the message is. You just know everybody is driving towards that. So, like I said, when I brought it to the team, it was interesting how there was an air of, oh, okay, I'll research that. And then it kind of dove straight into this conspiracy theory-esque, like, connect the dots. Like, well, wait, does that mean that this? And that means...
It was literally that meme from It's Always Sunny.
Exactly. Charlie Day is like...
With the hands. I also thought of the other one with the guy. Is this... And it's the butterfly. Every movie ever you've seen. Is this a MacGuffin?
So, within your guys' understanding, without going into detail of some of our findings and discoveries, what did you guys find out about MacGuffins?
That there's at least two different interpretations that kind of conflict with each other, depending on who we're talking about. Because your definition that you started off with is from Alfred Hitchcock. And then George Lucas has a very similar one, but it's slightly different, that kind of makes things that weren't really MacGuffins kind of MacGuffin-y.
What did he say?
It's mostly the same, except it should be the audience should care as much about the MacGuffin as the characters on screen. While a basic definition of Hitchcock's one is that people, the audience shouldn't really care about it and can be replaced with anything. So, like, in certain scenarios, that kind of conflicts with each other. But, and then... I was looking at a page and there's listing of another director who has a different definition. I'm like, I don't have time for all these different definitions.
Well, and it's interesting that you say that, because there was an interview that Alfred Hitchcock did way back in the day with Francois Truffaut, mm-hmm. Who actually he had stated in all of that saying, the only thing that really matters is that in the picture, the plans, documents, or secrets, whatever it is, must seem to be of vital importance to the characters. To me, the narrator, they're of no importance whatsoever. I think it's a difference of opinion in terms of like, or interpretation, difference of an interpretation. Because mind you, that was Alfred Hitchcock back in like the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. Mm-hmm. So maybe like the evolution of it. What about you, Amy? What did you find?
MacGuffins are everywhere.
comes the conspiracy theory.
Secrets. No, I think it really comes down to, in juxtaposition to both of those quotes from each of those very prominent directors, where I stand in the middle, because sometimes I do care about the MacGuffin, sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
And it's more, I guess, on the connection that I have with the characters and their storyteller that's taking care of them. So yeah, some of the times I'm like, oh shoot, yes, we need to know about this. Or sometimes I gloss over the fact that the MacGuffin is there and that's what they're after, because I'm so invested in the story of the characters themselves. So the MacGuffin instances can be important and not important all the same. It is the Schrodinger's MacGuffin.
No. Because Schrodinger's experiment.
I understand what Schrodinger's cat is, and I was making a joke.
But it doesn't make sense.
The MacGuffin is and isn't important at the exact same time.
The importance
it's
is
dead the, and alive.
The well, importance
I'm,
is,
well, I don't
is
open the box.
The importance is the Schrodinger's cat, not the MacGuffin. Because whether or not if it's there or not doesn't matter. There is a MacGuffin
in the box.
No. The MacGuffin is something there. The importance of it is what's in Schrodinger's box. So whether or not if it's there or not.
Just let me make the joke that most people haven't even taken the time to understand the concept.
Listen, Charlie. Go back to Philadelphia. Go get your pushpins.
My pushpins aren't here.
Pushpins and yarn. The board.
I know exactly what you were talking about.
So the thing is, I can't. I'm trying.
No, you're not.
What?
You're not.
No.
Spencer's even doing the furrowed brow. What the heck are you talking about?
Because it's. Okay.
X to doubt.
Listen, L.A. Noir, you can take that and go somewhere else with it. But
right to the bank. You can go right to the bank with it.
Talking about MacGuffins, let's go ahead and dive into a few for movies. We'll talk about movies first.
Okay.
Now, like we said, the interesting thing about what you brought up, Spence, is the fact that that does change the evolution a bit about a MacGuffin, but I still think both of those statements are still on the same track.
Okay.
Because I think Amy makes a really great point of it either being important or not important, it's still a MacGuffin. And that's the purpose behind it. The question isn't or not whether or not there's a MacGuffin in it. The question is whether or not there is or isn't importance.
I was applying my inner... I'm not going to try to explain that. I'll explain it off the air in how I related the Schrodinger's cat analogy. But keep going. I'm trying not to hang up on this so hard.
I'm like, wait a second.
Trying really hard.
Like, I'm going to say something. I'm going to come back to a previous point.
We're going to be in our final minutes. All right, folks, thanks for another. And so, by the way, this is what I meant.
MacGuffins.
So, we're talking about movie MacGuffins. Some of the most famous ones, obviously, out there. I mean, if we go back to, if we go back to the 80s. We're looking at like Raiders of the Lost Ark, the first Indiana Jones.
Okay, let's start with that.
Because
on my research, based on what I've seen as a discussion, that's not a MacGuffin.
Yeah, not Raiders, but the Holy Grail is in Last Crusade.
Well, no. So here's the thing.
This is his stump.
No, it's not a stump. It's a reality. The Ark itself is a MacGuffin because number one. Everyone is searching for it. It is the motivation for everybody's goal. You don't know exactly what it can do. You just know how it punishes.
Yeah, but the problem is that you can't swap out the Ark for something else. It has to be the Ark. Because that's how he defeats the Nazis at the end. If you swap out the Ark for, say, the chalice that they were going for, like that Holy wouldn't Grail. Do the same thing.
No. So what is... Okay, let's take a step back here for a second because I feel like you what is your interpretation, full interpretation of what a MacGuffin is? Because according to everything that I've researched, that is probably one of the biggest MacGuffins in cinematic history.
Okay, so my research took me into this. A good MacGuffin would be unobtainium from Avatar, because it doesn't have to be unobtainium. It could be something else that's easily like swappable with like...
But see, that's the thing though. Then you go back to the 40s and you go to a movie like Humphrey Bogart's The Maltese Falcon.
See, the problem with these lists is it always lists something from like the 40s or 50s, and I have not seen any of those movies, so I can't.
I, you know, raising my hand because Amy over there, I'm just kind of imitating.
I have a question.
I've seen those movies. And it doesn't... See, that's the thing though. Okay, let's not talk about an old movie. Sorry, I will get to your question in a second, but let's talk about a more recent movie. Okay. Pulp Fiction. The briefcase.
I haven't seen that.
See, that, and that's what I'm saying. The briefcase cannot be swapped out because the briefcase is exactly that. It's the briefcase. You don't know what's in it. You just know something of immense value is in it because everybody who sees it is in awe of the value that is in there. You as the audience member, or as if there is a narrator, you do not have any clue what is in that briefcase, which that in itself is one thing to take note of. Secondly, because you don't know what it is, it creates that illusion of mystery, but at the same time, everybody wants it. So that's the MacGuffin.
Well, see, the problem is I haven't seen that movie, so I don't know how it goes.
What, Amy?
I just followed the trope. Quickly, we must gain blank before they do, and it does blank.
That makes a little sense to me. I
quickly,
mean, it makes
quickly,
sense.
Quickly, we must get the Ark before the Nazis do.
Because that could be both things that are MacGuffins and things that are not MacGuffins.
Exactly.
Though. But that's, but then again,
that's pushpins yarn.
But so that's the thing though, for a MacGuffin, it's not something that has to be easily swapped out, because if you swap it out, then where's the importance in it? That's like saying,
that's the Holy Grail in Monty Python.
That's
in the
like,
Holy Grail.
Okay. A great example. The Holy Grail. Like whether if it's in Monty Python or The Last Crusade.
No, those are two different things. So in Monty Python, they're looking for the Holy Grail,
so,
right?
So
let me finish my thought before you jump on my train.
Choo-choo. You know, you don't want me to say things back to you, but then you say things like that, and then at the end of the episode,
you
made me feel bad.
You tried to run over me.
No,
I
go
just,
ahead.
This is my second episode just back. Calm yourself, man.
Go ahead, finish.
Okay, so Monty Python, Holy Grail. We can swap out the Holy Grail, essentially. It could be a magic mystery egg. It could be anything, because that will not change the course of the entire movie, the way that it's written. But in Last Crusade, it is the driving factor. It is the be-all, end-all. So those they are essentially the same item in two completely different spaces. That is the, it's a MacGuffin, not a MacGuffin type.
Yeah, so the first one would be a MacGuffin, the second one wouldn't be. Because I came into a second definition of something, and it was coined by Nick Lowell. It's called a plot coupon. And that makes a lot more sense for things. It's a thing that a character needs in order to like cash it in later in the plot for a resolution. And that makes a lot more sense for like, you know, the Infinity Stones or Horcruxes.
Mm-hmm.
Like those would be more of plot coupon-y things, even though they have a lot of elements that are kind of MacGuffin-esque.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they're MacGuffins with added coupons.
Well,
no, he's saying
they're MacGuffin coupons.
He's saying that even though they should be MacGuffins, they're not, and they're more along the lines of just additions to the plot to drive the plot forward.
Yeah, like in Harry Potter, like the Horcruxes, like, yes, the Horcruxes themselves can be anything, but like the fact that they're Horcruxes is important, and you can't take that out of the story.
What about the Philosopher's Stone in the first movie?
That would be a MacGuffin, because you really don't know fully.
Everybody's about it. Everybody wants it. We vaguely know what it can do, but we don't have
any
other driving
point. So if the Philosopher's Stone can be that, why can't, in your opinion, the Lost Ark?
Because the Lost Ark actually does things. It kills the Nazis at the
end. See, here's the thing, though.
Super important.
It does one thing.
Murders.
That's all you know. In what's the American name? I'm totally... Sorcerer's Stone in the movie. As well as the book.
Sorry.
Yes, the movie.
I know, sorry.
In the book as well as the film, we know what the stone will do because it's stated, but we don't know what else it can do. In Raiders... we know that it kills people who look at it, but we don't know what its full immense power is capable of doing or other abilities. We just know what happens when it punishes. That is one facet. It's like a diamond. You look at a diamond, there's only one facet to it. And that's the unique thing for me in terms of MacGuffins, is that from every different angle, the MacGuffin can be something else from another perspective, like the Maltese Falcon. Let's go back to the Maltese Falcon. For one person, it is an absolute priceless item. For another, it is the means to the end of investigation. For another person, that's a dead weight that you can use to beat somebody over the head with. There are several means to it, but it is still the entity as to which everyone is being driven towards.
Yeah, but that sounds pretty replaceable, though.
The Maltese Falcon?
Yeah.
There's backstory for the Maltese Falcon, so...
Wait,
as to where
have you seen the Maltese Falcon?
No. He just neither stated he hasn't seen it.
No, he was saying Pulp Fiction. He said Pulp Fiction he hadn't seen.
No, he also said the Maltese, because he said everybody always quotes old movies and like, I haven't seen the old movies.
But it seems like something happened around the 70s where like MacGuffins kind of transformed into something else. And then people were like, is this a MacGuffin?
And
Butterfly Man.
The Butterfly Man.
Yeah.
The what?
The butterfly.
Oh, the butterfly.
Is this a MacGuffin? Everything.
And so, like, and that's the thing. That's the unique thing. Because one of the greatest aspects of cinema, of film, is that it is not prone to just one singular interpretation. Going back from a macro scale. We're going backwards. We're going outside. You know, taking a look for the grand picture. Because, yes, the director may have an intention, but outside of that intention, the movie may still strike a chord with you in a whole different way. Some people may see the film and say, oh, well, the director intended this movie to be about a father-son relationship. Whereas to you, it speaks more towards team building. Or to someone else, it may speak towards the element of true love. Or to other people, it may speak... There's a lot of instances where you see it and you're like, all right, well, what does this mean? And... It can be something that's of importance. It can be something that's replaceable. I think, just like with what George Lucas says, I think taking both of those perspectives from George Lucas and Alfred Hitchcock, I think you can utilize that and still make it subjective to you. Because, like, for me, another great MacGuffin that I think we actually... You haven't seen. I know Amy hasn't seen. I don't know about you. Mission Impossible 3.
I haven't seen that one. Yeah. See,
Mission Impossible 3 is the return to form for the Tom Cruise Mission Impossible series. Mission Impossible 2 was a hot mess.
What about the first one? Wasn't it? Hold on. You saw the first one?
No. Hold on. There's nothing in there that. Stop.
The first one.
Stop. Pause.
Sorry.
No, because in part two was horrible. Directed by John Woo, everything was super stylized, ridiculous. In part three was a return to the actual form of. Spy espionage filmmaking for Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible. And in the third one, there is this... Tom Cruise is essentially retired from being a special agent. Mm-hmm. And what he does is he's a teacher. And so he finds out one of his students ends up getting killed on a mission. He goes to find out what happened. Or I think he actually goes to save her and she ends up dying. And so it thrusts him back into the fray of becoming a special agent to avenge his fallen student. And when he goes to find out, he's on this huge journey to find this thing called the rabbit's foot. You don't know what the rabbit's foot is. It is this massive, apparently catastrophic weapon or disease or something, but it's contained in this huge metal electronic looking container. And if anybody gets a hold of it, they could essentially take over and do a lot of damage to people, to cities and whatever. But you never know. And even at the tail end of the film, you when Ethan Hunt / Tom Cruise wins and gets the rabbit's foot and returns it to the IMF, Impossible Mission Force. That's actually what they're called. I love how nobody's paying attention.
He finally gets it.
When he finally returns it, he's like, hey, what is the rabbit's foot? And he goes, and the director at the time tells him, if you rejoin the team and come back to full active status, I'll tell you all about it. And Ethan Hunt just walks away. You never know what the rabbit's foot is. You never find out. Yes, it can be exchanged, but the importance placed on what that item is what makes the film so unique. And it's what makes the journey so unique. So, you know what's funny? I'm hearing chickens.
There is a chicken.
There's several. I think it's the next door neighbor.
I thought it was a cat because it was...
But that's what a cat sounds like?
No, because there's a cat.
Apparently.
Meow.
Did you have trouble in kindergarten with those sounds?
I went
did
to
you
not junior.
Have those one of those wheel things that you pulled and then it turned. The cow says. A malfunctioning.
I went to junior kindergarten. I was a kid. It's basically you're not smart enough to, or you're old enough to be in kindergarten.
Don't you eventually go to kindergarten?
Yeah.
Okay. Did they give you a malfunctioning McDonald wheel thingy? But so in that perspective, that's a MacGuffin. Yes, it could be replaced. But does that actually, in my opinion, kind of lessens the degree of what that is in the film? Because there's still importance placed on it. And it's important to the characters.
Yeah, it's important to the characters, but it's not necessarily important to you as an audience member.
If it's going to... Well, no. And that's where kind of I agree more with Alfred Hitchcock. Where I don't think it really has to matter to you as a people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Amy.
So.
Oy vey.
There's a thing.
It's always a thing.
So to determine if a thing is a MacGuffin, it has to answer two questions. One, is the nature of the item interchangeable? If it's an object of great value, which is important because of said value rather than any properties of the item itself, there's little difference between a diamond, a priceless painting, or an exotic statue. The quest surrounding it would differ only trivially. The plan surrounding its theft would be largely the same. The mission to transport it to a specific place would be the same, etc. Imagine when writing the script, replacing the name of the item and ask if the story is all that different. And then two, is the nature of the item irrelevant to the plot? All MacGuffins have some extraordinary value, whether it be monetary, prestige, historical, blah, blah, blah. These things are often but not always explained in detail within the story, so the audience understands the desire, but these elements are not vital to build the plot. Any usefulness from having the item is either non-existent or related to the coda of the story and the plot. The desire for the item is over. In other words, if whatever function the MacGuffin may have is actually relevant to the plot, magic sword, it can only be used to cut this normally uncuttable knot, it is technically not a true MacGuffin. So if it passes both the criterias, then congratulations, it's a MacGuffin.
So going back to what you're saying about Raiders, I'm with that said,
okay.
Going back to with Raiders, you could essentially then switch out the Lost Ark for something else mystical like that, and it would still be the same.
No, it wouldn't.
Why wouldn't it be?
Based on that definition, it wouldn't.
So it's the first one is the nature of the item interchangeable. Yes, we could change it out. True. Yeah.
No, you can't.
But
yes, you
but
can.
Is the nature of the item? But is the nature of the item irrelevant to the plot? No. So technically, it's not a MacGuffin.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Since you're reading from your research and you did 10 minutes of research,
I'm I did more than 10 minutes.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. I feel like, yes, both of you have very valid points. However, the fact still remains is that we're looking at George Lucas has been making films since what? The 70s? So we're looking at 40 years. Alfred Hitchcock, probably about 50, 60, 70 years. Where'd you get your sources from? Or is it based on anybody particularly?
So no, it's based off the primary source for this is based off Hitchcock.
Okay, so I'm okay with removing then Raiders. It's fine before Spencer has a has an aneurysm. The main thing though is this.
Mm.
I feel like there should still be some type of recognition to the idea of certain devices. Like, okay, take for instance. The Monty Python and the Holy Grail, doesn't that eliminate that as well because it's relevant to the story?
So the thing is, the first question is, can it be interchanged? Yes, it could be anything that they're after.
So then how is
but
it then?
Go ahead. Then it's irrelevant to the plot because what would happen is regardless of if it was the Holy Grail they were going after, the way that that movie is written literally could be, they could be looking for the llamas at the beginning of the title card.
With that same mindset though, then how does Raiders of the Lost Ark not work? Because it's still the same element. They're still searching after this one thing. And it's relevant to the overarching story because they're looking for the Holy Grail. The journey is set at the beginning of the film. And the only reason why that is in place of importance is because God himself shows up out of the clouds and demands.
But if God himself said, hey, I need you to find this bag of Cool Ranch Doritos, and it would be the quest for the Cool Ranch Doritos.
So then if that's the case.
And they still went through that entire thing for the Cool Ranch Doritos.
So if that was the same
Holy
thing
Grail
for.
In there, the Holy Grail with Monty Python is a MacGuffin because really its relevance is could be swapped out with anything.
But that's what I'm saying.
In
you're
The Last Crusade,
listen,
it can't.
Stop. Stop. Because you're contradicting yourself.
I am a contradiction. I'm a walking ball of contradictions.
Okay, Spencer, does that... Because you're not making sense over there. So does that then not contradict then the efforts of removing Raiders of the Lost Ark as it being a MacGuffin? Because in that instance, it sounds like then if that flies, then Raiders should fly. Because you can say at the beginning, oh, it's not the Lost Ark. It's actually... a barrel that God used to poop in. You know, whatever it may be, the fact is that that can be interchangeable because we don't actually see everything it does. We just know that it has importance to the characters. It doesn't have importance to us as the audience. And as we're looking at it, we're like, okay, this could be a box. This could be, it could be the Ark of the Covenant. It could be, you know, the egg things from Alien. It could be whatever, whatever. The fact is that it can still be interchanged because we don't know what the power is. We don't know the full scope of the Lost Ark.
Okay, but just because we don't know what the full power is doesn't mean that there haven't been rules set up for it that we know of in the movie. Because we know that people die when you look at the box.
No, we don't. How do we know? We know that after the film, but we don't know that before. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. You as an audience, don't nod your head over there. I see you because you've spit out all this stuff to contradict yourself, and then you're not even gonna.
I was trying to follow the two rules. The two rules: is it interchangeable? Number one. Is it two? Is it irrelevant to the plot? Like the plot? Well, the story can still go on if it was a bag of Doritos.
And the Holy Grail can't go on really because that's the first thing that is set to the whole journey.
It's interchangeable to the story because their story would still be the same.
Listen, because ooh. Am I going crazy or is that not contradicting itself? Have you seen Monty Python and the Holy Grail?
No. A lot of the movies that are in the definitive list, I haven't seen.
No, okay.
Which is a major problem.
So Monty Python and the Holy Grail begins within the first 10 minutes of the film with God coming out of the clouds and setting this quest to search for what, Amy?
Oh, Lord. To search for the Holy Grail.
to search for the Holy Grail. Now, if God said...
King of the Britons.
So that's exactly what the journey is set out to do. So, in that mindset, that should be the same thing for Raiders of the Lost Ark. At the beginning, the director of the school tells them, these men are looking for the Ark of the Covenant. Okay, and then Indiana Jones sets out to go find the Ark of the Covenant. Does he not? So then in that mindset, you're contradicting yourself in saying, well, Monty Python works, but Raiders doesn't. Which I get, Spencer, your perspective, mm-hmm. and I hear you, but with her added definition and then her insistence that it doesn't, it just doesn't work for me. So
what if they had told him not to find the Holy Grail? What if they had told him to find like...
Then it'd be a very short movie.
Yeah.
What if they told Indiana Jones, no, never mind, don't worry about it. See what I'm saying? You're contradicting yourself. So I'm trying to make sense of your statement and how it works.
MacGuffins are hard.
Yes, they are. Which is where I was going at before you said, I have this, is what I'm saying. It's a range. You can't... Yes, there are
many. Schrodinger's MacGuffin. Told you. It is both important and not important all at the same time.
Are you
regardless
gonna,
of it being in a box? Are you turning me
I'm
down?
I'm going to turn you all the way down.
No.
Listen, what I was saying earlier, the cinematic history of MacGuffins, because of the fact of cinema, it can be distinguished. However, because like I said, there's a range of how people interpret film. And just like film, the responses from films as well as the aspects of it, like take for instance, you've seen Interstellar.
Yes.
The black hole is a MacGuffin because we don't know really what it does or how it works.
Okay.
But it is the driving force for everything from the beginning through to the end because it is the nexus point of how people move in the film.
Okay.
So could that be swapped out? Yeah, maybe with a Stargate, maybe whatever.
Yeah.
However, in this instance, it is still within the film. And you could swap it out, but do you really want to? So I think in that same effort, that we don't know what it does. We don't know how it often works. Minusing Amy's contradiction, including her logic, but the statement about, yes, it is... Not it is irrelevant to the story in terms of overall, but it is still important as a... What was the first rule?
It's the interchangeable. Is it interchangeable?
So it can be interchanged. Do you really want to? Probably not. Second rule.
If it's irrelevant to the progress of the story.
So it's a part of, but...
It's not a driving force.
It's not a driving force. Would you say that would work as well?
I think so. It's been a while since I've seen Interstellar.
Which we need to watch. You need to watch it. We need to have a viewing party and watch
Well,
that.
I'm up for Monty Python and the Holy Grail, too, because the absurdity of that will make him so happy.
There is a list. Me and Spencer have already talked about it. There's a list that Spencer needs to go through so we can...
Hey, Spencer and I have a list. Yeah.
So, okay. I'm gonna take this off and throw it over to Amy because I want to know what are some other MacGuffins that you found. I can dispute them.
Okay.
Just kidding.
So ready to get your MacGuffin toasted.
Okay.
You know,
with my MacGuffin toasted
with cheese.
See,
So the compass, Jack Sparrow's compass.
Okay. I thought you were gonna go with the conversation we had yesterday.
No, Jack Sparrow's compass in Pirates of the Caribbean. It's really not, when we're looking for the Black Pearl, it is really not a driving force. It can be interchanged, and it's not really relevant.
But goes to the question, too, as well. You could interchange it, mm-hmm. but would you want to?
No. And that's the thing, but we don't really know, and it's such a small one. Because it shows up in all the other movies as well, too, as like the monkey.
Pause real quick. Have you seen the three Pirates of the Caribbean movie?
There's more than
all three? No.
There's like five of them. The original trilogy.
I watched each one once because that was
That's
too
much. Okay. But you
You've
remember
seen four and five?
No, I mean of the original.
Okay,
three,
okay. Sorry. I'm so like, because I don't even think I've seen four and five.
But his compass, the compass that he's using to find what his heart desires most. That's what you find when you literally go through the entire thing. You find out because someone way down in 3, 4, whatever, blah, blah. I lost count. I don't know.
Well, in 2 and 3, it becomes the driving force because then Davy Jones wants it because he's ultimately looking for his heart. Like his heart's desire is to find his heart.
He's got a jar of dirt.
Which supposedly contains his heart. But no, I think that's a good one. I think we have to add a third rule then, or actually, like not an amendment, but like a sub rule to
an
two,
addendum.
A sub rule to two, that can it be interchanged? Yes, but if the answer is yes, you would lean more towards not wanting to exchange it.
So we need yarn and tacks.
We need
what
yarn, red tacks, and a corkboard.
I have one of those.
But I in that element, I have to agree. I think that's a key part of the story overall. Like, if you're looking at the whole franchise, like, part one, not so much.
Yeah.
Because...
That's why I picked the specific... Because that's the same thing when I brought it back to Sorcerer's Stone, Philosopher's Stone.
Captain Jack Sparrow.
For Harry Potter, that one is, for the first movie, it's there, but it's not really, like, super-duper, like, crazy... Crazy important. Everybody wants it. Everybody is going after it. We kind of know what it does if you're a history person or you've learned from other sources, but still at the end of it, regardless of if he who shall not be named is going after Harry, he would still go after Harry at the school, whether it was the Philosopher's Stone, whether it was the Mirror of Erised, whether it was the Marauder's Map, if it was interchangeable item within there, Voldemort would still always be pursuing Harry.
Okay.
So getting the Philosopher's Stone, Harry getting the Philosopher's Stone first isn't super, like, necessary.
What about you, Spence?
Well,
first off, I'm sorry, what are your thoughts towards her? Towards her decision.
The way you said that was so angry, right?
Sorry.
Towards her.
Towards her her choice.
Finger, like the spinny finger of anger.
Towards her decision, like her choice.
No, the Philosopher's Stone is a good pick because, like, I didn't even think about that. That's because, all I could think about Harry Potter was the Horcruxes, mm-hmm. and out there not once. But
keeping that in mind with the rules that we've established or stated, does it fit adequately within all those rules? Because this is, mind you, I'm going to keep going back to this because you guys really played a heavy emphasis on those rules.
Because you tried to define it as
I defined it as something that is up, because just like what George Lucas has done, he had evolved off of that and taken it into his own interpretation, which it's George Lucas. You have to take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
He made Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, that's very true.
So with all that, keeping in mind that the evolution of MacGuffins has changed throughout the course of time, and much like movies are interpreted by the audience, it's the same nature for us and MacGuffins, I feel personally. I can take what Amy has stated as rules. I can take what you've stated from George Lucas. I can take what I've read and what I've learned from Alfred Hitchcock and interviews and movies and films. But at the same time, I can still say, I can take all of that and add this caveat. Because for me, a MacGuffin is a constantly evolving thing. So I would agree with Amy. Now, if Amy was on this side talking to herself in this manner and she said that, I'm pretty sure this side Amy would have disagreed and said, no, well, you see, blah, 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 blah.
You just said you would have disagreed with yourself.
I disagree with myself all the time. I'm me. So my name is literally three letters long. I have literally, you know, I'm at odds with myself all the time. That's a terrible lineup for a joke. But also, oh being reminded, so if we want to take it back to the 30s, 40s or so, when was Casablanca made?
I believe in the 40s. It was still during World War, or it was post-World War II.
So we're late 40s. So taking Casablanca, which I know is one of your favorite movies,
The papers, Letters of Transit.
The Letters of Transit would be a MacGuffin because...
But you know what they are, though. That's the thing. They're Letters of Transit.
They get you out.
What's his name?
They don't get you in.
What is this? Hotel California over here or something? what's his name?
But I wanted to bring up one that you knew, one that you could talk to specifically, because you're so, you know, all about that movie.
Well, yeah, and I really like the movie. What's his name? I can't remember his name.
Who?
The name of Ugarte. The guy, the really shrimpy guy that ends up having the letters.
You've got to help me.
Yeah. He explains what those letters are at the very beginning. And so you know what those letters are. You know the kind of power that they could be capable of. We don't know the full extent. And they are part of the plot. Now, if those were interchanged with invitation to the Führer's birthday ball, like, that'd be different. I mean, it wouldn't really add to the film. It could be interchanged. But I wouldn't want to because of the nature of the story of this film. And it fits. If it was anything else, it would kind of take away from the overall film. Because you take a look at those letters of transit, those are the exact thing that Victor Laszlo and his wife need so that way they can get out of Casablanca safely and make it to America.
Well, let us acknowledge that it's only Victor Laszlo really that needs it, because his wife technically kind of doesn't. She's okay. He's not.
Yeah, but what does that have to do?
If she wanted to ditch him on the runway, she could have.
So
I'm sorry. Besides, we go deeply into Casablanca. Like,
so, but I'm saying though that the letters of transit are an important part of the story, and much like we were saying with the Raiders of the Lost Ark, same thing we were saying with Monty Python and the Holy Grail, the same thing we were talking about. Like all of those, the fact is that those are relevant to the story.
Oh, you want an irrelevant one?
No, I'm just...
The Heart of the Sea from Titanic.
Oh, no, that was on my list of things I was going to talk about.
That's bad.
Why is that bad?
Just a giant necklace. Look at my giant necklace. It has no relation to a boat crash.
According to your logic that you've stated, that would be a perfect candidate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're saying you don't...
Oh, no, it's just I don't like... Okay, for somebody who literally, I had a Titanic phase when I was probably 11 to 13, where I was like eating up everything Titanic. I had never seen the movie until I hit like 23 because, one, no offense, it didn't look anything like what I wanted to focus on about the integrity of the ship, the historical time, nothing. And then the entire thing, like throwing the neck, woman kept this giant, Sorry, that was really hot.
We're really peaking on this.
sorry. But it bore, literally, aside from being a shiny trinket, it bore no relevance to the story whatsoever.
It made an excellent MacGuffin, though.
Yes. Because everybody's like, why is she throwing it overboard? What does it mean? Well, does it have powers? Was it responsible? Like, were they fighting for it? And that's why the... No.
Did you say, does it have powers?
Yes, yes. You did.
What? What? No.
I had
there
hope.
Was no statement at all that it had powers. The weight of the heart of the sea brought the ship down.
It could have been in the purser's office.
Where did that iceberg really come from?
Right. It was actually sitting on the little floaty thing outside.
She just like terraformed it with the powers.
Exactly.
Of the she's a waterbender.
Oh my gosh.
She
the Titanic fell over the same time Aang did his thing in the movie.
Exactly.
And I think it's a really good MacGuffin. I think the nature of it goes towards a little bit more leans towards your logic in its fullest sense. Mm-hmm. It's a good candidate for all three of our stipulations. But I do have to agree with Amy. It's just kind of a meh.
Well, the brief. So to go to one that you brought up, the briefcase in Pulp Fiction. Which,
are you taking mine? Oh my god!
No, I'm. She took it. You brought it up already.
I didn't get to talk about it. It's okay though.
You talk about the briefcase in Pulp Fiction because I actually saw that movie.
Oh, go ahead.
No, it is a MacGuffin.
How so though? Explain. I didn't go into detail, so I'm saying explain.
No, you have your. I'm like literally all of the stories that are interwoven within Pulp Fiction. Aside from one that does not have any utilization or collection of briefcase, the briefcase is just kind of there. Like, it's like, ooh, briefcase. And reading back what Tarantino, I was like, what's his face? And I was like, what's his face? The guy that did the directions and the what's his face. Oh my gosh.
The guy that did the directions.
And the what's his
face. Air traffic controller.
But Quentin Tarantino had stated that in the first draft of the script, it was supposed to be diamonds, but he thought diamonds were too overused. So then they created a glow to give it some mystery, and then he's gone back and said, like, I really wish we didn't put a glow into it because then it limits what it could be. But so his goal was that it had always been a mystery MacGuffin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just weird.
And it works. Have you seen? Haven't seen Pulp Fiction? Mm-hmm. That's a movie we got to see.
No, caveats.
He needs to see. So with Pulp Fiction, it's a great MacGuffin where the fact is that it has still stood the test of time in terms of interpretation. Some people believe it's gold. Some people believe it's the soul of Marcellus Wallace. Some people believe it's...
He's a character.
So Marcellus Wallace...
How the hell did he get a soul in a briefcase?
So that's the interesting thing. You'll have to watch it first. There's a lot of things that are up for discussion on that, but it's a really great MacGuffin. I really like that one, and it's one of my favorite films in terms of the directing and storytelling of Quentin Tarantino, which makes it so you'll see because you've seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
You'll see a better version of Quentin Tarantino than that one
with less feet.
With less feet, well,
yeah, it's only the sequence when they're dancing.
Yeah. But Spencer, what about you? Any MacGuffins?
We already talked about all mine.
Really?
Seriously, I took all.
I only found two.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was hard to find one.
What were the two?
It was The Heart of the Ocean from Titanic.
You took that, Amy. And the other one?
I mentioned this one. It was Unobtainium from Avatar.
Okay.
What about your shirt?
What about my shirt? Oh, I don't know. I haven't seen that movie in forever. That's why I didn't even think about it. I know I've seen it.
Well, yeah. Go ahead. Speak towards that.
No, I don't remember the movie enough
so
to do that.
So, in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Secrets of the Ooze,
yeah,
the sequel to the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
This is the one with Vanilla Ice, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Go okay. Ninja.
And
go Ninja.
And what's his name? Amy. Who's the name of the guy who actually was one of the people in the suits, and now he's the pizza guy.
Oh, Casey.
No.
Oh, sorry. We're talking about the Foot Clan.
No,
we're not talking about Shredder.
Just
Ernie.
Just don't.
This is
Ernie.
Also the one with the huge Shredder, right?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Ernie.
It's Ernie. It's Ernie something that I always remember. But he what? Was he.
Ernie
he's,
Reyes Jr. or something.
Yes.
Yes.
Ernie Reyes Jr. Yes, him. He's in this one
good
as well.
Good job, Spencer.
But this is the one where Splinter reveals the container, if you will, that held the ooze that. More, you know, metamorphosize them into the turtles of the art today.
Yeah.
And then it goes into because quite actually now that I think about it, another MacGuffin in this film could be Shredder, because it's like, how the heck did Shredder get smushed in a trash compactor and then come back and be like, let's do this? Like, it's like, doesn't make
he's
any
surprised.
Sense
he's like,
and then
snacks.
And then he turns into Super Shredder in that one. There it is, Secret of the Ooze, which is super trippy.
Wizard of Oz.
What? Are we done talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Did you even let him finish?
I didn't know if he was done with...
You were talking about it.
Well, I was giving you stuff to... So, ultimately, yes, the ooze itself is the MacGuffin because you just know that it changes things. You just don't know what else it can do. Now, the interesting thing is that it's tied into the lore of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So, I don't know if it can be interchanged.
Yeah, you could.
Well, also, to speak to that point, if we're digging real deep, the ooze that changes the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is also responsible
for... Oh, my gosh.
Daredevil.
So here's the funny thing.
There's a funny thing.
When Daredevil first came out, the writers of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the comic book, took that when he gets... stuff splashed in his eyes, turned it into like this toxic material that crept down into the sewers, and it turned the turtles into what they are today. Now, there's no official canon tie-in to that.
Okay. So is that just like a fan headcanon or something?
No, that's the creators themselves saying they took inspiration from that in the comic book.
Yeah. Mm. Kevin Eastman liked...
And?
I never remember the other guy that's with Kevin Eastman, which is terrible of me. I mean, I remember other people, Bill and Bob, but I don't remember Kevin and... Like, there's also King... There's a couple...
So Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird.
Laird, that's right.
But yeah, so I think that's a really great thing. One thing that Amy mentioned, the Wizard of Oz, the slippers, those are MacGuffins. Those are shoes, which can be interchanged for a helmet, a bracelet, a mask, which
a
that goes
named
to...
Bill. I'm making call out references to other, you know, Land of Oz books. There's a chicken named Bill.
Oh, wait, no. What
that was Return to Oz.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of for a second.
That's Return to Oz. Wizard of Oz from the, you know, 30s.
Was that chicken named Bill in the...
No, it wasn't in Wizard of Oz.
Her name is Bettina.
No, I mean,
he's talking about Return to Oz.
Yeah.
It was Bettina. But think she goes by Bill. Because they called her Bill.
That whole movie was just weird.
I read the books.
Yeah, I saw the movies, which was disturbing.
That's super...
Because I remember just that, like, sled moose, like... And that's
that
like,
rickety put together janky sled moose, like, hold on.
The best part is that movie is literally three or four books put together. That's why it makes no sense.
It makes no sense because the guy was on crack when he did it or something. Because that whole what?
Mr. Baum was not on crack. Oh, you mean the director? Never mind.
Yeah, the director.
I don't know what he was on, but he was on something.
Like that movie, like.
That
like
is
if someone
MacGuffin.
Just told me that, I was like, oh yeah, that's probably correct.
So let's kind of jump over from MacGuffins and movies, which I'm pretty sure we could probably go through. Like another one that we had mentioned, The Mask, since I mentioned The Mask from the movie The Mask with Jim Carrey.
Ah.
That's a MacGuffin. It could be interchanged with anything else.
Yeah.
It could be a shoe. It could be a glove. Yeah. You know, and the fact is that it is the interesting driving force and everyone wanting to obtain it. What?
Amy. The money at the end of Mad World.
It's a Mad World. Rat race.
And Rat Race, the money is a MacGuffin.
But it's money.
But it gets destroyed at the end of the
race. It doesn't get destroyed at Rat Race. It gets donated.
It's gone.
It's not gone.
Yeah, it is. The people that raced for it no longer get it.
I think that's... I don't know if that works because it's money. Like, what are you going to replace money with?
A diamond.
A split? Well, maybe. I don't know.
Ranch Doritos. Water at the end of the
desert. Looking at those Cool Ranch Doritos.
They're over his shoulder. They're right there.
There. We're solving the problem. No more Cool Ranch Doritos.
You're just like, girl. Stop it.
I don't know. That's a loose one for me. I don't know if it hits fully. I don't know.
Split a diamond.
You can't split a diamond. Which
you can't split a diamond.
You devalue it instantly. Yeah. Excuse me. The hardest substance on earth,
and
you
split it.
So that is okay. Whatever. Okay, let's transition over.
Okay.
What about MacGuffins in TV? Anybody recall? So, real quick, before anybody blurts out anything, I'm looking at you, Amy.
It's always me. It's always me.
Seeing as nobody can hear you because you're so far away from the microphone.
There you go.
seeing as the month we've had last month, the freaking sonic screwdriver. That could be interchanged with anything else.
It now has a
wood. It could be a wand.
Wood setting.
It could be a wand. It could be a weapon. It could be anything else.
It could be it could be kryptonite in Smallville.
Or sorry, let's take that back then. Take a step back in that. The TARDIS.
I want to lean towards not only because the TARDIS occasionally has...
it can be interchanged. It's something that everybody wants because it seems like everybody wants to get a hold of his TARDIS.
It can be interchanged. Extra rooms that we don't get to see.
And it can be interchanged for a, I don't know, telephone booth, DeLorean. It could be interchanged with a big sled.
It just got stuck on the police box.
But it can be interchanged.
Wasn't it like a giant egg to begin with or something?
It's a silver tube.
Hey, focus. We're not in Doctor Who month anymore.
Sorry,
just kind of so hard.
We're checking. I'm just checking.
Yeah.
So I brought up kryptonite. Does
that work for you guys?
I could say the sonic screwdriver.
Go with the sonic screwdriver. I'd have to think about it for the TARDIS.
Agreed.
Because I'm probably leaning towards yes, but I need to think about that more.
I would think it does because according to everybody's criteria here, it fits within everything. It is, what was the first rule that you mentioned, Amy?
Rule number one was that it has to be interchangeable.
Mm-hmm. So according to that rule, the TARDIS can be interchangeable.
Okay, fine. And then rule number two was that is it irrelevant to the storyline? So like, can the story keep going without it?
Yes.
No.
There have been several episodes where the TARDIS was not even involved. Take for instance, in this last run, or in the third to last run that you guys had me go through with Capaldi, the entire episode is them on Mars and the TARDIS is not even in the episode.
And to be fair, like the first series of the third Doctor, the TARDIS was locked out, so he couldn't use it.
Does that work? Yes.
Please leave
the suggestions at the door.
We don't have a box.
You mean a TARDIS?
No. Just kidding. Oh, he that saved him from a MacGuffin joke.
Okay. I want to say it probably, since Doctor Who has been on for so long, mm-hmm. it kind of depends on
the episode, when the you're series. Yeah.
Because I'm looking as a whole. Like, just like any film, just like any trilogy, any franchise, I look at the thing as a whole. Like, take for instance, which is really unique, information tends to be a MacGuffin in the series of 24 because it's like specific information towards whatever. I haven't fully seen the series because it's
a lot.
Everywhere.
It's a lot. But I think that's part of what makes that franchise as a whole unique. You don't have all the information. Somebody does have it, and it's this sense of MacGuffin. Now, that could be interchanged with whatever. I don't know. But I think in that effort, because I didn't really watch 24, so I don't know the whole thing. But to two people who do know the majority of the Whovian franchise.
Okay, now that I've had a second to think about it, it switches from being not a MacGuffin to being MacGuffin. Because there are things I know you haven't seen in Doctor Who where it definitely is not.
Yes.
But there are many, many, many times where it is. So it's one that like it oscillates back and forth.
What about you, Amy? No. Any other TVs?
So I said Kryptonite in Smallville. Because in mm-hmm. the varying states of kryptonite, crystals, we know, we don't know.
But in that effort, can that be... So that goes back to... I think that one's kind of interesting because I don't know if you can interchange that, though. Because kryptonite is specific to the detriment of Superman and his abilities. If you exchanged it for, like, granite or some type of other type of material, would it still have the same effect in the story towards the characters? That's all I'm saying.
The other one I brought up,
you're the comic book person, why wouldn't you know?
because different
you literally
types
have
so
somebody
when I say
Superman
when fanatic. I say kryptonite, I mean kryptonite as the title as a whole, because there's different colors of kryptonite which have different purposes and
but it's
different
all
meanings.
Still kryptonite,
but you don't know that until you're like, ooh, look, shiny red rock, what's it gonna do if we put it on top of Clark
when
in
they
time
come for you, bad boys, bad boys.
Man, that this has been an episode of just bad transitions into stuff.
So kryptonite in its true in not the green form, but in because there has been such a wide swath of kryptonite that's shown up.
Here's what I'm saying though.
How about if you want to talk comic book movies?
We're talking about TV shows.
Well, see, and that's the problem because I didn't even get to bring up the Bert and Ellie Diamond in Birds of Prey.
We haven't gotten to
that was film.
There's a Bert and Ellie. Oh, the diamond
from Birds of Prey that Cassandra Cain steals.
Well, she swallows.
Yeah. Anyway, so
gosh. So, going back to your statement though, does that work? In your logic of rules, does that work in your logic of rules, and does that work in my logic of rules? Personally, I think it works. However, if I go according to you, I don't know if that works. Like, according to your rules that you've stated.
Well, also, Smallville became so weird.
It did.
That's like, if we're talking longevity, where we could honestly look and go, yeah, the TARDIS is and is not a MacGuffin simultaneously. Kryptonite works in the exact same fashion of Smallville because however many seasons, like what, 12? Oh my God. Oy.
Oy. Well, okay. I think it comes down to is whatever you have to swap it out with, it also has to hurt Clark and give other people power.
Exactly.
And I don't know if like...
There hasn't really been anything else, in my opinion. Guy on the couch, because you've seen all the seasons... Is there anything else within my brother, the snoring guy, that I've mentioned? His name is Ben.
I'm giving backup
information so that way I can tell him. Ben, who is sitting over there, who is a huge fan of the Superman franchise and Smallville throughout all 10 seasons, was there ever any other element similar to kryptonite that caused Clark pain and also gave powers to other people?
There was.
What was it? I remember that.
And I believe that was when he was still on the farm, not in Metropolis yet.
So that was pre-season 7?
Yeah.
I believe it was. Yeah.
So, okay. So that's one instance. So you do...
besides emotional pain of being a teenager and an alien and the girl that you like starts dating the bald rich guy.
Okay. You've confused him now because...
I didn't understand what she said. I just heard bald guy and I understood that was...
It's.
I said emotional
when you
pain.
Say alien, are you referring to the Martian that came to the planet? No. Or are you talking about Clark Kent?
I was talking about the emotional pain.
Okay, conversation over here. Hold on. You, I need you back over here. Thank you. You answered my question.
Emotional pain. Hey, being you. A teenager.
I'm. Focus.
Focus.
Oh, my Lord.
We're going to have to add a fourth mic.
We're going to probably have to add a fourth mic. So, in that effort, I still think. According to your rules, not according to mine, because according to mine, it works. But I am looking through the filter of all of our stipulations. I don't know if it works.
Well, and that's why I even brought up, because the other one that I brought
because, up. Because, yes, there's one instance, but that's not. I'm pretty sure the sword gets destroyed.
I believe it's a dagger.
The dagger gets destroyed.
Yes, eventually, I believe so.
So, which means there's not an option. So, go ahead.
Well, the other one I was going to bring up was for Firefly, which has both a movie and a series, and the series is the only, you know, one series. I had brought up in talking with you, my question was the planet that Tam was on? Yes. I was referring to Serenity the movie, but
yeah.
Tracking back to the series.
It's not mentioned in the series.
Yeah. So then the Reavers in the series are the MacGuffin.
Yes.
But in the movie...
Because you can... According to what yes. we've talked about, you can exchange the Reavers for other madmen or cannibals or
yeah.
creatures or whatever. But they are the MacGuffin of the Firefly universe because you don't actually know where they've come from, how they've become who they are, and what is... They're just an ambiguous item within the franchise. So yeah. Go ahead.
So series, Reavers. Movie, Serenity. I said it was the planet.
And I think it's still the Reavers, personally.
Well, the Reavers will always be their MacGuffin.
Yes, but I feel like Miranda, the planet...
An added MacGuffin? Do I get two MacGuffins for the cost of one?
You've seen Serenity, right?
Yeah, I've seen Serenity a long time ago.
Oh, my gosh.
I saw it, though.
So, in my opinion, when I was talking to her about it, I assumed Miranda was more of a destination and doesn't become aware till the third act of the film, which is just another place to stop by for information. That would be like in the Last Crusade, where the Holy Grail is at is a MacGuffin, but can it be interchanged? I don't think so. Miranda can't be exchanged for any other planet. I mean, probably another made up one, but it's still the same thing. I don't know if Miranda works. I think it's still, for me personally, I think it's still the Reavers. What do you think, Spence?
Yeah, I'd go with Reavers. I don't remember most of Serenity. Well, all I remember is who died at the end, and I was upset.
Hey,
that's not... You don't know.
He hasn't seen it.
Yeah,
Oh, wait, he has seen it. What am I talking about?
Even if he
hasn't... She hasn't seen it. No. Oh. Sorry, someone else hasn't seen it.
I've seen it.
Yes, sorry. Of course. Someone else on this planet hasn't seen the movie. That's a big shock, Eddie.
Oh my! He's pointing at me, and I brought up the point, and like, no,
I was.
Oh my gosh! Are you having a Simon moment?
I was speaking towards.
Am I Kaylee and you're Simon? Like, this is how this is happening.
Speaking about your oldest
fluffy pink chest.
Hey, I was speaking towards your adult daughter, your grown-up daughter, your daughter, your oldest daughter. I
am tired.
I am tired.
Do you need more coffee?
Listen. I was meaning about your oldest daughter because she's the one who hasn't seen it.
Correct.
All right.
The daughter Spencer. Who's not an adult.
I know, yes.
Thankfully.
Spencer, did you have any other TV MacGuffins?
No, I didn't. Nope.
Aye. And mind you, there's several different aspects of it all. And in terms of the MacGuffins... in TV, it's a little bit, in my personal opinion, it's a little bit more difficult to identify the full amount. It's easy to recognize within Firefly because unfortunately there was only one season. So you can kind of, whereas with Doctor Who, you got a lot more history to consider. But I feel like MacGuffins cannot be things that are only established in one episode if there's a whole franchise to experience. That was a really heavy sigh right into the mic.
Sorry.
He's doing a good job.
Yeah, I'm being on mic, so, you know, just blowing all that air.
Now, with that said, I want to ask a really, really big question to both of you guys.
Oh, help us.
That's what we need.
For storytelling and within the films thus far, are MacGuffins necessary? Do you feel like there are things that are absolutely, like, or maybe even, I'll take it a step back, are the need to define MacGuffins necessary?
Like, what do you mean by that?
Like, the whole conversation we've had.
Like, is this whole conversation pointless? Yes.
Good to know people can hear this after the episode is done. Like, oh, I don't have to listen to this? All right. Boop. The idea of a MacGuffin is the idea of it, not so much its presence in the film, but the idea of, like, oh, well, that's a MacGuffin because blah, blah, blah. The idea of there being MacGuffins, is it necessary? In all honesty.
The idea of it, I'd say, yeah, because that's probably a good way to, like, well, from, like, a writing perspective, I assume that would be, like, you know, gosh, I don't want to say this. It would be educational
with
to
words,
learn.
Spencer, with words.
Hear my thoughts.
I don't have an interface for that.
No, I feel like that would really be a good thing for, like, you know, like, fledgling writers to learn about. So, like, hey, this is a MacGuffin. It's like, you know, something that no one else needs to really know, but, like, people who are, like, in a career of writing might need to know.
Okay.
So, there you go. I'll put my stamp on that.
Okay. What about you, Amy?
Because sometimes we need to know the difference between a plot device and something else.
Or a plot coupon in Spencer's case.
Plot coupon.
I like plot coupons.
Two
though.
For now, one sale.
Now, real quick.
It's the Infinity Stones.
Well, so hold on. So real quick, can you define again what is a plot coupon?
Plot coupon, the thing that a character needs in order to obtain in order to cash it in later for a plot resolution. So the Infinity Stones.
Okay, I see what you mean. Why you use Infinity Stones? Okay.
Which All right. and. We don't need to define a plot device, correct?
A plot device is just something that's in the film. It's a a plot device.
Keep going.
It's usually something that is crucial to the overall story, kind of like the
it's an object or an
item. So plot device is another word for a plot coupon.
Well, it's something that purely drives the plot forward. There's no
that's the intention behind it.
Yeah,
like for instance, going back to like Bill and Ted, the
song.
Bill and Ted,
which one?
Bill and Ted's, well, both of them, all three of them technically. The phone booth is the plot device. It has to be the phone booth because it's been established throughout that is the time traveling piece.
But the song technically would be a MacGuffin if you're following it through all three.
The
song that unites all the world together.
Well, that's not established until part two.
No.
No.
No, it's through all of them.
Yeah.
Because in part one, they say that Wild Sounds is the biggest, because they have a song that unites the world. And the
part one didn't specifically say it was one song.
Yeah.
They played loose with that.
Yeah.
George Carlin, we miss you.
Okay. So, with that said, are they necessary?
I agree with Spencer that it's a great, when you're learning a craft, to understand where parameters are. So if somebody goes, well, why do you have this, you know, sonic screwdriver that only works on everything but wood? And you're like, let me fix that really fast. You can organize your thoughts better and understand, I think, when you're coming down to storytelling, it's not is it necessary, but does it enhance it, your story? Because sometimes, just like I said at the top, I like when it's a MacGuffin and when it's not a MacGuffin. Do I care about it? Do I not care about it? Like in Harry, so going back to Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Sorcerer's Stone, initially, I am so wrapped up in the journey and the story itself that whether or not he gets the Philosopher's Stone first before the quote-unquote mysterious entity that's coming for it is not super relevant to my enjoyment of this film. But having it there adds it's a side quest that isn't, it's a fun side quest. It's an offshoot of the main quest. Like, it's there, you can do it whenever you want, but you're being reminded, like, hey, do you remember that side quest? We should do the side quest.
For me, I think they are important. I think the idea of what a MacGuffin is to give audiences a sense of mystery, because if you understand cinema, you know, you as the audience member are the all omniscient individual. You know what's on the other side of that door even before the hero goes through it. You know what is coming down the pipe because you are seeing glimpses of the villains plotting. You know what happens when this person decides to propose to this person because you've seen their journey thus far. You as the audience member are usually all omniscient. You have views of everything. You see both sides of the coin. You see how things are progressing. You can ultimately formulate your own ideas of how things are going to end ultimately, which is why there are the there's the grave misconduct of certain people when they start quoting, like, or they start calling out what's going to happen at the end of the film as the film's still going, like, oh, look, I bet you at the end they're going to get together, or oh, I bet he's going to die at the end of this film, oh, he's going to do this and that. I'm you look confused.
No, I'm just thinking about,
I haven't
Dark
even
Passage
gotten to my point yet. Well, so just what is the confusion?
Well, I was just thinking about in calling the viewer omnipotent or omnipresent.
Omniscient.
There you go. That one.
Omnipresent is everywhere all at once.
Which sometimes they like to give you that by jumping between scenes. But I was thinking about in Dark Passage that you're getting a different kind of perspective.
Yeah.
But you don't know, like, everybody's intent.
But with all the information you're given, you can ultimately formulate how things are going to pass. Like when Humphrey Bogart goes to a door and there's people on the other side with guns ready, or you know that you're like, oh no, he's going to get into a firefight, or there's somebody that's doing this and they slip something in the drink, like, oh my gosh, he's going to get sick. You recognize a lot of those things because you are all omniscient as the viewer in the film's universe. With that said, having still bits and pieces of mystery really still keep us on our toes as audience members, because take, for instance, Memento. The actual guy himself is the MacGuffin, because Memento is one of Christopher Nolan's first films, starring
Guy Pearce.
Have you seen
Memento? No, I like Guy Pearce.
Oh, what about you, Spence? Have you seen?
No.
So Memento is essentially a movie, a story about a man who has tattoos all over his body and wakes up with no recollection of before, only with a note and him having to go and figure out all these clues. It's a great film because it's very much like Christopher Nolan. It's cyclical. But the first note that he gets, the first name, what is the name? Janice something, whatever. There's a name on the sticky note that is on the mirror when he wakes up and comes to. And it's a great instance where you don't know anything. You are about as clueless about everything as Guy Pearce's character. And that's okay, because that's part of the allurement, the enjoyment. Alfred Hitchcock once explained in a lecture in 1939 at Columbia University. He said, it might be about a MacGuffin. It might be a Scottish name taken from a story about two men on a train. One man says, what's that package up there in the baggage rack? The other one answers, oh, that's a MacGuffin. The first one asks, what's a MacGuffin? Well, the other man says, it's an apparatus for trapping lions in the Scottish Highlands. The first man says, but there are no lions in the Scottish Highlands. And the other one answers, well then, that's no MacGuffin. So a MacGuffin is either going back to, and when I say, I brought up Christopher Nolan because I'm going to, this is the cyclical thing. I'm going back to about Amy's correct information about the Schrodinger thing. How the MacGuffin can be and it can't be. It could be something that turns into a MacGuffin. Things can be a MacGuffin. Things may not be a MacGuffin. The bottom line is, it goes back down to you as a cinematic viewer understanding it and making it things your own. And if you see things and you're like, well, I really like this film and I think that's a MacGuffin, great. That's you. And you are more than welcome to have that. A lot of the rules that we abided by, these are some of our own personal rules. These are, or researched rules.
And they're very strict too. Like, we honed them in strict versus going.
Yeah, because I was going from a very general outside view of just like, this is what they are, and let's take that as
because
what we
then
win.
I would have been, and like, Wally World at the end of National,
National Lampoon's
Vacation. Yeah, the Wally World is MacGuffin.
Like, you win Charlie Day, you win Charlie Day, and I'm like, hey, okay, let's have a discussion. I'm all for it. But all in all, I think MacGuffins are clearly something that, as filmmaking continues and cinema continues to evolve and we continue to go to the movies and we continue to consume movies like that, I don't think we're ever going to ever stop defining it as something completely unique to ourselves. Mm-hmm. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Film Losters. Remember, you can check us out on all streaming platforms, on Google Play, Libsyn, Spotify, Player FM, Pandora, all over the place. Also check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. Like we mentioned, we got a great few of episodes from this last month on Doctor Who. Celebrate with us by checking those out. We'd love to hear you have a listen. We'd love to know what you think. Drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. Again, this was a great conversation, and what a great way to kind of kick off the holidays for me, because I really like things like, you take, for instance, things like Rosebud, which is a Citizen Kane film. Soylent Greens. That was really, yeah, that's not a Christmas movie, but okay. I was going over like seasonal thing. But
Gremlins.
No,
so, the Gremlins. The Magua.
The Magua in the first Gremlins, yeah.
That's a Christmas movie.
So this is going to be our first Christmas with a very interesting, you know, setting and environment. And so one of the things we want to make sure that you are doing is you are staying safe, you are staying healthy, and you are doing the best you can to make sure that as the new year comes in, we're going to have an awesome 2021 and, you know, new beginnings and all that kind of stuff. So here's to a great winter season kicking off. And I am glad to be doing it with these two here,
yeah.
With Amy and Spencer Jolly Green. okay. I don't know where... from?
You still, just because of his shirt.
What's going on?
It's the green shirt. Excuse me, I've been doing this with you for 2 years trying to figure out something new to say every time. You got to give me some credit here. I've come up with, except for the last couple of months, about you still being clean for COVID. That about wraps up another awesome episode. So, from... Why are you shaking your head? You know, I don't need your shaking heads. Disapproval is not allowed.
Disapproval is not allowed unless it's being, you know, aimed at me.
Oh. Did you bring the donuts? Okay. from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Amy for now.
Class dismissed.